thank you for attending. Thank you also for supporting this monastery, this spiritual path, and this mandala. Please continue to help us if you can as we go along, doing some expanding here and there. More about that later. And thank you, and thank you, and thank you. This evening's Dharma talk is titled Invisible Pride. Invisible Pride. And several points that I am thinking about that this afternoon. I sometimes don't think of Dharma talk titles until a few minutes before I give the talk, and then I'm kind of on my own. I have to just give the talk. This time I had some time to reflect on it, and there are some points in it that, because I'm a little spacey sometimes, or maybe most of the time, I want to make sure I covered those points. This area is just as invisible. In other words, you won't really know you're full of pride if you're operating in what I'm referring to here. The pride that you know about is the pride that you're probably not fueling too much. You just know that you're full of something, and you don't particularly buy into that kind of self-deception. So anyway, invisible pride, pride and shame seem to rotate in different fashions with different people in the way they are tied up with the various aspects of the three poisons. Most difficult form of pride is when you don't even realize you're full of your ideas and concepts. You just think you're correct. So wouldn't particularly think you're full of yourself. You're just correct. You're just right. Your ideas are correct because you see more clearly everything. This kind of relative confidence is a protective shield for the also invisible grasping at an artificial self, ego, or narcissism, extreme self-centeredness. You just think you're right about certain things about yourself and about others, and they never really get inspected or investigated unless there's a tremendous amount of awareness practice going on, and also a strong Dharma teaching, and a strong Dharma teacher that can help you. You don't have to get rid of anything. You don't have to get rid of pride. You just have to see that it sometimes runs you, runs your life, rather than you're operating out of what? Consciousness only. Just out of the truth. It's possible to do that. It feels impossible while you're working on it, because I am completely swamped by otherness, by pride, or by self-deception. Very difficult stuff. And the conventional way of working with this is to stop it. Don't do it anymore. To shut it down. Pull a plug. Not that you couldn't pull a plug, but it might be a different kind of plug that you're looking at than just the relative plug of fixing it. I'm not against different ways of working with that. There's areas in the therapy area that are very powerful ways of working with relative truth, of actually working with your tendency to dump your opinions, ideas, judgments, and anger on others. And perhaps you should be doing that. So we're not talking about better and worse, or a better way is the spiritual path. This is not for everyone to do this. Sometimes people misunderstand and think that I'm saying that the spiritual path is somehow superior to the mundane path. It's just a different way of working with you as a physical being living here. It's just different. I could comment more on it, but I don't want to continue necessarily to talk about in that area. I want to talk about the self-deception that is invisible, right? Being full of yourself, full of your ideas, your opinions, your judgments, thinking you are correct. If you begin to see that, quite often the ego mind, the self-centered mind, will just shut down on that and go in a way that doesn't expose that too much, or covers it up with further opinions, judgments, conclusions. I've had people come this way that started out having a Dharma teacher here, and I'm not going to name anybody because there's a lot more than one, start out that way, coming this way, but when they start to get close to the razor's edge, I don't know if I want to do this anymore. I think maybe I need a different teacher. Maybe I need to do a different kind of meditation. Maybe I need to go back and do the old kind of meditation that I learned years ago from so-and-so, called this or that or the other thing. Several people. I don't know how many. I haven't counted them all. I don't have that many students anyway. So it takes a lot of bravery or confidence or some kind of understanding or some kind of, I call it transcendental stubbornness. You're just stubborn about this. You know you're here. You know that you're identifying with a living form, a living mind. You have a history of your mom and dad and how you grew up and what high school you went to and the difficulties you had with other children. You have all that memory, which comes together to form kind of a solid feeling that you are somebody going somewhere. And then you stumble into this way of looking at life. Begin to train your mind. And then you start to look more and more closely at what this is. And you listen to these teachings. You study this teaching. You've heard me say countless times, this is not studying biology or history or all of the things that have a solid way of understanding it. There are facts. This is not about that. It's going to be very, very difficult. So that's why I say, I've said many times, you need to study the Dharma. You don't have to understand it. Please, rather than just assume that I'm what I'm saying, that you understand what I'm saying, you might want to start with that. I will tell you right now, you do not understand what I'm saying. And you may never understand it. But if you're practicing the path, the way of the Buddha, 2,500 years of this spiritual path, there's a damn good chance you're going to realize it, because this is a powerful, powerful, what is it, algorithm for how to see the truth yourself. You see it. You don't just believe a bunch of ideas or commandments or precepts. You don't believe the precepts. You can see this. And I'm telling you, you can see it. I'm completely confident, totally confident. I can't guarantee it, because I know that if you don't practice, there's probably less likelihood of you seeing it. Although occasionally people have spontaneous awakenings, not very many, at least we don't hear about them. Or they, one day they just see that there isn't anything but this, that there is no solid separate identity. They are no longer an individual, and they realize it. That is rare. It does happen. Usually it takes a lifetime of practicing, of looking at the nature of the mind, using the teachings of the Buddha and teachers down through the 2,500 years, centuries and centuries and centuries of people using this practice, studying this Buddha's Dharma, practicing to train them, their mind, facing the wall, facing the mind stream, and watching, watching, observing, observing. The pride is just a way of talking about an aspect of consciousness, and the three poisons. It is a combination of ignorance, which shuts out whatever's arising, and passion prefers this understanding of what is arising. That understanding, not this one over here. There's no inspection. There's no benefit of the doubt. It's just that's the way it looks. How can you be sure? Just that's how it is. Right. If you see what this is, you won't know what it is. If you know what it is, you may not be on the path. Maybe you've just stepped off the path. It's better than that. Worse than that. Right. Belief in thoughts, belief in emotions. I'm not saying you can't have an emotion that is directly related to a conventional relative circumstance, that anyone would have emotions over that, of course. So it's not that you won't have those. It's just that when they show up, you neither believe them, nor disbelieve them, nor ignore them. What do you have to do? Feel them. doesn't mean the feelings are going to go away. They can get more intense the closer you get to see the fundamental nature of reality. The emotions will scream at you, trying to get you to bring out of consciousness that poor part of consciousness that is in a knot of confusion that is a me. That will give you some relief. At least it's me that's feeling that way. So you've slowly started to separate consciousness from that which arises in consciousness. And instead of illusion, looking at illusion, illusion is looking at delusion, belief in a self. There is no one there. This is an astonishing illusion. And if you pinch your arm, which sometimes is the way you need to wake up and think in the movies, I need to pinch myself. Well, that's not going to work in this delusion. That will just increase the delusion. There's nothing to pinch. There is no one. Don't believe it. Observe it. When you leave here today, the next time, if you're continuing to be a meditator, which I hope you are, sit down and watch the mind. That is your introduction to the nature of consciousness. And that's where you will see your own self-centeredness and your pride, which is slowly coming in front of you as an apparition. It loses its invisibility and it becomes more and more solid until you realize that even that is unreal. You can't even get a reference point of your own pride. There is no one. Have some questions out there.
Elizabeth Bowing, you were talking about people get scared and leave the path.
Yes.
You said it takes a type of confidence.
Yes.
What is confidence that's not a type of belief?
Might be a belief. It might function as a belief. People who start practicing Buddhism quite often, they believe in what the Buddha said. They believe it. Relative truth, the call to provisional teachings. They work with relative truth. Life is suffering. The cause is desire. The goal is the path. The path is either the Eightfold Path or Shila Samadhi and Prajna, however you want to look at it. And you kind of believe in that. I'm going to do this. I heard what the Buddha said and I'm going to check it out. And then you get further into it. The five skandhas, it's form, feeling, perception, concept, and consciousness. And then you look at the 12 links on the chain of existence. You see how there's an actual structure that shows the way from ignorance right up to sickness, aging, death, how a human being lives and continues to reinforce the self-centeredness of someone who is actually real and is living and can succeed or fail. So yes, there's all kinds of belief happening there. We're not saying that when you enter the path, you shut off your belief. But as a teacher, I'm going to say, Don't believe me. Do they think you can do that? No, I can't do that. But I know that's a place to start. If I say, don't believe what I'm saying, you're still listening to it. So it might change you a little bit. It might help you to just kind of settle into that and just maybe consider, maybe contemplate that rather than as something that's ultimately true just because the teacher said that. But something you could reflect on, think about. More?
Those are good bowing. Is there a confidence that doesn't function as belief?
Yes.
What is that?
It's the confidence without conditions. Unconditional confidence. But does it look like I have confidence or don't have confidence?
I don't
know. So you don't see me as being confident?
I don't know what's happening over there. I don't know.
Okay. I'm fine with that. I'm not questioning it. I'm just listening.
Are you confident?
I'm asking the questions here.
Oh. I got confused.
No, you didn't. You're asking the questions. I'm the teacher. You ask the questions. Did you get confused? You see where I'm going with it. And say, obviously, I must have some kind of confidence, or I couldn't sit up here and do this day after day, week after week, month after month, year after year, not 7 days a week, but close to it sometimes. Where is that coming from? How can I sit up here and even presume to talk about the nature of what's happening in your mind just because I'm wearing a robe or I'm a monk? No. Ready? How can I do that? That's a question. Wouldn't that presume some kind of confidence? You can go in and say, I don't know. Okay.
I don't know what confidence is.
Okay. Well, I guess I'm screwed here, aren't I? You're not going to help me. Can anybody help me? Help, help, help from the students, for the teacher. Does this look like confidence or not? Or does it just look like self-centered arrogance where I'm pulling a bunch of bullshit on you? Tell me. What?
Looks like confidence.
Okay. You see what I'm saying now? What is it? You're afraid of passion, aggression, and ignorance. And I am passion, aggression, and ignorance. I'm not separating myself from anything anymore. And thank you for your help. I can't teach like this unless you ask questions or present yourself in the way you do that. I need a student. And you're showing up as a student. You just said, I don't know. Thank you for that. And that's sincere. Go ahead.
Most are good at bowing. So is confidence, fearlessness.
Totally. Because it's not fearlessness because there isn't anything scary happening. It's just that anything scary happening is seen to be an illusion. It's unreal. And we're no longer befuddled by it, let alone deluded. And you might even say, if you were trying to do some kind of macho presentation, you might say, bring it on. You're not going to do that because you're not necessarily interested in the performance aspect of it. But it's that kind of a feeling. It's kind of that kind of an understanding. That kind of an insight that nothing can hurt you because you're no longer just someone can kill you, take your life. But sometimes it feels like that might happen. This is somewhat of a precarious position to be in here. But who this is and who that is, I can speak for all of us who is not threatened. Do you think that you're somehow threatened? Your misunderstanding what this is. More.
Mozuku Bowing, I recently heard you say that fear of doing the wrong thing could still show up for you.
It shows up all the time.
What is it to function with confidence while fear of doing the wrong thing?
You know, there's no one who's afraid. There's just fear, self-existing. The Tibetans call it Rangjung. If the Tibetans were listening to me, would they agree? They might say, oh my God, why do people keep misunderstanding that concept? And would I care? No. Because I'm looking at what I'm seeing, not out of what I think the Tibetans are seeing. It just sounds like that's a similar thing to what I'm seeing. Self-existing. Everything that exists has its own dynamic right there. But it is an aspect of the illusion. Wrong junk.
Wonderbaum, are you talking about ultimate confidence right now?
Yes.
Is all relative confidence pride? Why?
Quite often, there's some kind of knots around there it's reinforcing a self-centeredness. But sometimes it's such a low key that you won't even think of that person over there. Like, we don't think Nishikai is full of pride, do we?
I do.
Huh?
I do.
You think you're full of pride? Mm-hmm. But realizing you have some pride, which I know he realizes that about himself. But if you realize that about yourself, it's unlikely to be displayed very much because there's always the other side of the pride, which is what?
Shame.
Shame. And that shows up not as, oh, God, what have I done? Oh, I'm such a terrible person. No, it's not that. It's just very subtle, just not feeling like you're quite good enough to do anything or stand up. always kind of undercutting yourself. Just another form of ego. Pride and shame, not two separate things, not the same thing. Has to be seen. When I say seen, you have to actually see it deeply yourself. Otherwise, there's a continual reaching for a self, reaching for an other, and trying to shake some kind of truth or happiness out of those situations, trying to get some samsara to give you some pleasure, some happiness, some satisfaction, some accomplishment. Don't cry, Chisho, please. He was just covering his face. Go ahead.
Mozoku bowing, is there a path, quality, confidence that doesn't function like belief?
Again, please.
Is there confidence on the path that doesn't function like belief?
Eventually. And you, and because you, there's no real boundary there, the walls of the mind come apart. So you'll just notice when you see pride show up or shame show up or self-centeredness show up in this mind stream or any mind stream, you'll just know that it's unreal. So you won't feel it. You won't feel it by pushing it away. Most people are trying to stop their negative feelings. If you're on the path and you realize the nature of this, what is being pointed at, you'll no longer fight with anything, including your own mind stream. And so therefore the karma that shows up as the way these ears are shaped, the color of the skin, sexual orientation, I mean that orientation, excuse me, it will just show up and there will be no correct or incorrect, right or wrong. More?
Beyond knowing, is it self-centered or even, yeah, is it self-centered to keep returning our attention right here?
No, this is your body. So yes, return. This does not think. I mean, even this doesn't think. We just think it thinks. But I think it doesn't think. What do you think?
I agree with you.
Well, you're a psychiatric nurse, so I thought you might have a different orientation towards that.
Beyond dying, the body doesn't think. Did you just say that?
No, I was referring to the brain pan particularly. That's definitely processing something. And there's all kinds of things that are tied in there that look like memory and probably are in a sense, but that's not the whole picture. Question?
Yun Baoing, when is it self-centered or arrogant to return to this right here? Not this, but
I don't think it ever is. Don't maintain it, but return to it. And I'm not talking about all the chakras. I mean, if you want to use chakras, then go ahead. Tibetan tradition is full of that situation of using chakras, as is various Indian traditions. Not incorrect, just another way of doing the spiritual path. Question? There a further question in here? Is there one out there in that other place we call Zoomville?
Yuhong bowing.
Yuhong.
When people, especially people who are older than me, ask my, could be tips or advice, I feel honored. At the same time, I do feel the pride because it seems like I know more, at least than the person who asked me for help or whatever. So yes. How can I look at that in the way that when I feel, if I'm scared of the pride, I may offer less. I may not say much to that person. So how can I work with my pride at the same time help that person? Bowing.
Thank you. Thank you for the question. So it is all only about being aware of that. It's not about not being full of pride. As I said, where the pride is doing some damage, you could say, or creating more circularity, chaos, and so on, is where it's invisible to the person who is manifesting in that way. They don't see it. They just think they're right. And so in your situation, you know, you're not totally locked down on that. You see the pride show up and you see some self-centeredness show up, but you're aware of that. And so sometimes you might modify that a little bit based on what's happening in your environment. Sounds to me there's a lot of awareness. This is not a compliment. I don't do many of those. But it sounds to me like you have some awareness about the pride showing up and possibly even the shame showing up. How about that? What do you think? Just be aware of it. It'll come and go, it'll get larger, get smaller. Relative truth will just do all kinds of things that when you observe the self-centered part of the mind, part of consciousness, the ego mind will look for some kind of a support, like getting rid of pride would be a powerful support for the ego. And self-esteem training would get rid of the shame. It could modify the whole thing. There are all kinds of ways of working with this. They are not incorrect. It's just that they're the mundane path of trying to repair, get better, rejuvenate, whatever, rather than seeing the deep nature of the issue or the mistaken identity, that there is a solid, separate self here who is wrong or right or can be fixed or isn't broken, or you could go on with all kinds of things. Even isn't broken has its issues. More? Yuhong.
Yuhong Baoying. I noticed that when I'm aware of the pride, I tend to offer less or not saying much, try to listen. When I'm not aware, I just try to seem to dump my so-called help. So just like balance, middle way.
You're fine. Just continue to get back to the cushion much as possible. Don't teach unless you really feel like you have a student in front of you. And of course, you do some teaching. I'm not talking about that kind of teaching. I'm talking about don't teach the spiritual path. This doesn't mean if someone says, how do you meditate? If they're sincere, tell them how to meditate. If you'll say, what is the basic teaching of Buddhism? Then there's several to choose from. Life is suffering. Nothing comes from its own side. It's an individual self. Just one simple statement. And if a person is listening and is interested, a couple of those will possibly, they'll ask more questions. Or that might be enough. They've heard enough. So don't hold forth and teach, but answer questions as clearly, and precisely as you can. Is that helpful to you?
Yes.
Very good. Mm-hmm. Yes. I think you're doing good. The Chi Shou.
Thank you.
Certainly.
Chi Shou Baoying. How do I work with the pride that shows up on the cushion in terms of various stories, Baoying?
Just listen to the stories. Don't fix anything. Eventually, by not doing, you're sitting and perhaps, I don't know exactly what you're talking about, but maybe you're thinking, have some kind of a story about something you've accomplished, something that you feel maybe a little bit better off, or have a better understanding than others. Just receive it. Do not modify anything. Just sit and just watch that story go by. If you push it away, it will go down and resurface. But if you explain it or justify it or try to talk yourself out of it, then it just goes in circles. It's the very nature of samsara to go in circles. But it is the nature of reality to do nothing. And so just observe. Give it the full treatment. Don't do anything with it. Do nothing. Just notice the story. It has this shape, that shape. Maybe this is the 15th time or countless times you've heard that story. You're smiling, so I see you're hearing that. So what do you try to do? Do you try to stop it or change it or reinterpret it or criticize yourself?
Just allowing, I watch it and then it goes away and it comes back.
Yes. Well, there's no way to know the causes and conditions completely that are behind that story and what a labyrinth might be back there. So this is where it's important to remember this part of the teaching that I've say over and over again. This is an ideal time to bring it up. It is about the intention, not the success. Success is relative truth. And you may succeed relatively, you may not. But if you have the intention to look at the pride and to accept, when I say accept, I don't mean accept, grasp it and get a credential out of it. I'm saying just look at it. Another way of saying it along the lines of observe it is just to receive it. Just receive that you're, don't add on a story to it, but just receive that you're full of, that you have this puffed up thing happening in your consciousness. And just watch it. And it, by not pushing it down, trying to get rid of it, by not adding to it or trying to talk yourself out of it, and by not distracting yourself or going in a different way, then eventually it runs because it's based on relative truth. And the relative truth matrix that is happening for everyone in different forms, eventually by not fueling that, it just deconstructs, just like Coben said when he translated the Heart Sutra mantra of gone, gone, gone beyond, gone completely beyond, so be it, awake. And he translated it, falling apart, falling. He was talking about, instead of something going beyond, he was saying the very structure that he believed in and thought was true is just coming apart, falling apart, falling apart, falling apart, falling apart, falling apart. Nothing to do. And so by watching the disturbance or the pride or whatever we would name it, or shame, or any of the other things that show up in the mind stream, by just observing it, it just runs out of steam because it gets its steam from being opposed, from being agreed with, or from being ignored, passion, aggression, and ignorance. By doing nothing with that, eventually that starts to fall away. And what is revealed is your true nature, which is beyond time and space. Even to say time and space is a silly thing. It's beyond a Dixie cup and a bottle cap laying on the road that's been run over by a truck. I'm looking at it right now. And it's also raining. You can look anywhere. You can see anything anywhere. Some people call it creativity. I call it awareness. It's just awareness. There's no one who's creative. But everything is available to you. Everything in the world. Please look deeply. Look deeply. Thank you, Tisho.
Wonderbine, would it be a good practice to look at whenever we feel confident or competent, to really look at that more deeply, to see the invisible pride?
Don't necessarily look deeply, but just look at the surface. Everything is available on the surface. Death is a relative situation. Ultimate situation is everything's right here. There isn't anything else. This head turning, this is ego. This is why we have bodies. It's because we are made up to be separate beings. This isn't the only thing that you've been, or that I've been, or that we will be. Consciousness only. It's everywhere. There is no location for it. Therefore, it's everywhere. Go ahead.
Divine, so when we're looking at our confidence, our competence, what would help us see the pride that's there?
Just returning to that whatever you're looking at, just return. When you start to wander away into concepts about it or beliefs about it or ways to overcome it or any story about it, when you start to go into the story area, just return to the original inspiration, the original looking at it. Return, return, return. Return to the teacher, the teaching community. Return to the Buddha, the Dharma, the Sangha. Return to the structure, the algorithm that has been set up centuries and centuries, millennia ago, that can help you or any person in any culture eventually see and awaken to the ultimate truth of who we actually are as human beings. More in here.
Nick, is there such a thing as invisible shame? And if so, how does it arise as compared to invisible pride?
Interesting one. It would be invisible because you think you're right. You don't really look at it as shame particularly. If you're looking at it as shame, then it's then that combined with sitting practice of meditation could begin to reveal the depth of that clinging to an ego, to a self that is not good, is not doing well, it's never going to get anywhere, it's full of defects. Then there's another kind of shame that might be might not go in, might not have the awareness there. So it might just be just a fundamental conclusion. You don't even look at it and just conclude that you're no good, you're not going to get anywhere, and your parents were right, you suck. You're never going to make anything of yourself. And you just say, that's probably true. So I'll just continue to be a what was it you were going to be?
Don't know yet.
Huh?
Don't know yet.
Ah, I like that. Don't know that. I don't know either. I'm wondering what I'm going to be when I grow up. Further? You have some time left if there are other questions. Yes, sir.
I'm wondering if embarrassment shows up without a story, am I missing the thoughts that are fueling that embarrassment? Is it likely that I'm ignoring if I don't have a storyline behind something?
Yeah, something is being shut down. There's probably some kind of cause and effect behind that in the form of a story that might be blocked out. But the energy there is still there when it's out. It's like when a person gets depressed, and for what? No reason, no cause, no effect. Or for when a person is just full of anxiety or looking for a cause, they feel terrible. And if they can find anything that might be blamed, they'll go after it. Because they need to have, they get some kind of safety. Maybe you get some kind of safety out of having someone that has caused this situation. More?
I think I'm wondering how to see those areas we don't see.
Just return to it. Return to the cushion. Return to the teachings. This is why I say about the teachings, you don't have to understand it. And I'm not saying you won't understand it, but to try to live up to a certain standard of understanding based on the relative culture they're in, like the complete, I have to use the fancy Sanskrit word, isn't it imbecility? That's a Sanskrit, isn't it? The imbecility of testing children. This is just crazy. No, shouldn't be testing anyone. That doesn't mean that we don't ask Rumi how to spell supercalifragilisticexpialidocious and actually watch him spell that, and he's 5. I mean, but that's not a test. He might feel tested somewhat. It's not. We're having fun. It's fun, but it's not something that he has to march into a room, sit down full of other people, and all take the same test. This is so disrespectful to human beings to think that you can decide ahead of time what is successful and what is not. We completely shut down the astonishing creativity of human beings. I know mine was shut down by having never even considering the way that I learn, because I learn visually. I don't learn abstractly or with abstractions, although I'm fairly good at using them. But that came from looking, seeing. This is shut down in people because they want to promote a certain kind of learning, which is also very valid. But we are not meeting other humans because we want to control them instead of actually encourage them to be creative and live an uplifted, creative, cooperative life with other human beings. And still we turn it into warfare as soon as possible. Competition. Everybody knows what everybody else's score is. We all so know the people that are failures, the people that never get anything right. Laura? Did you guys team up with that question? Yes.
Beyond bowing. How can seeing what looks like
lighten up. Okay. That's an old ancient teaching from the 13th century. Change your attitude and relaxed as it is from a teacher's 7 points of mind training.
Lighten up.
What's a good bowing? What would lighten up look like?
Lighter. She ain't heavy. She's my sister. That's funny. Go ahead.
Beaven bowing. How does observing what we think is the pride or shame in another person?
In another person.
Yeah. How are we missing ourself? How do we miss our own pride and our own shame when we look out and we're picking it up?
Mind your own business when it comes to other people's pride and shame. Respect people's confusion. I've said this hundreds of times. Respect, if they need help with working with their confusion, they'll come and ask you and give you permission. But even if they're sitting next to you, if they don't. And then this includes your own offspring. Respect their confusion. Because that will be seen or sensed much more than any kind of information you can give them on anything. Just to see that they are being respected. Further questions if you have it. Take your mask off, would you please? Oh, it's Beyond.
Hey.
Go ahead.
I'm just wondering if there's anything to see about ourself when we see pride, yes, or shame in another.
When you see another person in that? Yes, it's a mirror. We're looking in a mirror. But that being said, you may not be ready for that. I'm looking in a mirror a few minutes ago when Elizabeth and I had our pretty intense interaction, which I thought was pretty intense, didn't you? Yeah, maybe. Wow, I'm getting all the drama. Thanks. Yes.
Beyond knowing, how do we deny ourself when we go out looking and focusing on?
Anytime you go out in any direction, you're covering up your true nature. If you're going out with something out there that needs to be pushed or pulled or shut away or instructed, or anytime you go out, called an outflow in our way of understanding, don't outflow. But if you do outflow, then be very aware of the outflow. Then it's not exactly an outflow or a reaction to someone. It's closer to an actual action, which comes out of dependent origination and not out of our self-centered bias or wanting this and not wanting that. More?
Yeah. Beyond bowing, how is it that pushing and pulling on another, what looks like another, disrespectful to my true nature?
Because their true nature and your true nature are not two different things. We all are Buddha nature, but we're covered up by the individuality and the causes and conditions that show up as passion, aggression, ignorance. And when you are at the mercy of passion, aggression, ignorance, then you fight, or you concede, or you ignore, or. But if you realize, then you, as I said earlier, then you are everything that shows up. You are that. You're including passion, aggression, and ignorance. But there's no longer a solid being there anymore.
Something different.
I'm fine with that.
Can intense fear and action arise in a way that's not enmeshed in a sense of self?
Well, intense fear, mm-hmm, and what was the other one?
Action,
doing something, pushing, pulling, shutting down, opening up, and fear. Okay, what was the question around that?
Can intense fear and action, or something that looks like relative action, come up together in a way that isn't a balled up
self? Yes. You're in a burning house and you see that it's burning and you run out of there. Well, fear of being burnt is the fear, and running out of the building is the appropriate thing to do. Because there's an identity with the body. And the body is endangered. Is that the area we're looking into?
Yeah.
I mean, that example is very, very definite. But when you start to do that in your mind stream, when there's no actual threat anywhere, then you're inventing that, and that is that protects the imaginary part help to the imaginary self. And it's not threatened. So therefore, then you have a lot of churning around something that isn't even threatened in the first place. You can't threaten something that is unreal. But if you think that you are real, a real person, then you can be threatened, you can be controlled, you can be manipulated. Look all over the world, look at all the politics, all controlled by fear. And strong people, strong men, they call them, controlling people. Because they're fear, the fear, paranoia. No mind training, just solid belief that we are a solid, separate being living here, and we had a birth date, and we'll last so long, and we'll manage to continue to make money and get food and live the life of Vaishnavacy.
Mozuka Bowing, when I think of confidence, particularly relatively, but also it shows up in book studies or Dharma, it looks like people think the building is on fire and they're running out. But there's no actual fire.
Where is this at?
It just looks like that we function that way a lot. We're sure there's something happening and we're functioning out of that, and we're making it up.
I would say that's true. A lot of that's happening.
So what does confidence look like if you don't know what's going on?
I'm not sure where you're, how you're creating that inquiry. You say more about it. You just got through saying people are generalizing about people, that people are operating out of fear.
Well, it could be any number of emotions, but people look confident, and including myself, and I, in that they think they know what's going on. So when you talk about confidence, I'm thinking of the kind of invisible pride where you're just sure what's going on and what you need to do.
Okay.
What's so, the question? Is there a place for confidence when you realize you don't really know what's happening?
Well, if you don't know what's happening, then don't do anything. You mean, should you develop some kind of artificial confidence? I'm not clear on how I can fundamentally help you in that. I think there's definitely some awareness going on there, but I, other than practice, see the truth yourself. I'm not sure. I'm not really clear on how you're caught on that.
I think I'm afraid of confidence because it looks like somebody's committed to something that may not be true. I guess I just, when confidence shows up, I have doubt.
So confidence that shows up is relative confidence. Confidence is unconditional, is not particularly confident about something. Yes, sir.
Yeah, well, just relatively speaking, would you say that you see what's going on without knowing what's going on?
Yes. There's no way you can know what's going on, but you can see it. And what I've told you hundreds of times, what I see, not separate. What I see is a whole lot of so-called separations that are an illusion. Human beings, and they need to be respected because they are confused about their true nature. And they think they are ongoing separate beings. That doesn't give me or anyone who sees the truth to abuse or control anyone. So there's a great amount of respect for people's confusion. Otherwise, we can't help anybody. If we think that you're confused a certain way because you don't believe in Muhammad or something, you don't believe in Buddha, this is just disgusting, a bunch of material there to treat human beings in that way. People should be respected in their confusion. So there's a possibility that they can see clearly who they are and what is happening as they proceed along the imaginary time stream called sickness, aging, and death. This is happening. So let's see if we can help each other work with this. So I'm not confident in anything. That's my confidence. You may ask me questions that I say I don't know, but I don't. But if I do respond to a question, and no matter how I respond to it, I'm looking at the answer. It's like it's visual. You could say more. You know, more.
Zubabine, it sounds like your confidence comes from seeing what this is, not from relatively necessarily knowing something.
I don't know anything. That doesn't mean that I don't know if fire is hot. That doesn't mean that I don't know how to drive a car. Lots of relative things are happening, but those are all have their own dynamic. There's the dharma of driving cars. There's a dharma of frying an egg. There's a dharma. Those are relative dharmas. But the Buddha's dharma, or law, or truth, is that there isn't anything. This is a man 2,500 years ago discovered something and encouraged his fellow countrymen to see the truth themselves. And a lot of them did. And they're still doing it. And they're doing it in China and Burma, different ways, or Ceylon, Sri Lanka, I should say, in Japan, Korea, China, the United States, Great Britain, Canada, South America, all over the Buddha's Dharma is all over. And it's very simple. See the truth yourself. Don't believe anything. Don't believe, don't disbelieve, don't ignore passion, aggression, ignorance. Do it with the awareness. Do it with the sky of your mind, not with the clouds. But don't get rid of the clouds. Don't ignore the clouds. And don't believe the clouds. They're clouds. The confidence is there isn't anything else. So the confidence is indestructible. This is why you have what's called the Vajra-like samadhi. Vajra, adamantine, ultimate, indestructible understanding of what this is. I don't claim anything, but I know about that. Go ahead.
Mazuku bowing. I've heard you say, don't believe your thoughts, but trust the space in which they show up.
Yes, that's what I'm referring to.
What is it to trust the space if we're still identifying with and endeavoring to respect our own confusion?
That's it. You ask me a question, I'm saying, what you just asked me is it. Do you know what you asked me? Can you repeat it?
I think I said, what is it to trust the space if we're still identifying with and endeavoring to respect the confusion?
And now say that in a positive way without making a question. Say it. Just say it as if that was the answer. Say it.
Trust the space while you're identifying and endeavoring to respect your
confusion. Yeah. Bingo. Yes, trust the space. Or not what is it to trust the space? You know the space of the sky, the clouds in the sky, space is infinite. We call it infinite because it goes quite a ways. At least the sky I've been looking at looks kind of endless. Maybe there's an end somewhere. Trust the space. It doesn't give you anything. It doesn't provide an answer. It doesn't do anything. It's just the way things show up. If it's an object, it needs space to show up. You just answered your own question. You can do that. You may never, if you understand what you just said, you may never have another question. Is there a final question in here? A question?
Bowing.
You have a question, Tony?
I'm bowing. No, just trying to keep up and
okay.
and learn from the other questions.
Okay, good to see you again. Been a while. Yeah, hasn't it?
Yeah, a couple of years.
Yeah, that's a while. Maybe it's a while. Is it a while?
Pre-COVID, yeah.
Pre-COVID, that's a while.
So that's a while.
Yeah, okay. Well, welcome back.
Thank you.
Was that Yuhong?
Yes, Yuhong Baoying. Two questions. First question, regarding confidence on this path, I have several factors for my own confidence, still trying to find, I don't know, my confidence. I'm wondering, is the vow the fundamental confidence?
Yes.
So when you say return, just return the vow, that's our confidence.
That is an ultimate form of confidence that shows up in a relative way. Just because you repeat it, you return to the vow. We don't even know what the vow is. Be with all things. How the hell do you do that? Save all beings. How are you going to do that? You can't. You return to it anyway. And then if there is a realization, then the vow vanishes because you are the vow. Your whole body is the vow. Your whole mind. No longer make any decisions about anything. And no longer see any difference between this and that. And it's not an accomplishment. It's not like this super ego that you become, according to some teachers. But until that happens, then you stay on the path by returning to that vow. I vow to be with all things. I vow to put others before myself. The three pure precepts. And it's hard to do. You don't have to succeed at that. You can continue to think, I'm never going to put all these crazy people before myself. What am I doing this for? And then if you're a student of mine, you'll say that and you'll think that. And the next thing you're doing, you'll say, I vow to be with all things. I vow to save all beings. You'll return to the vow. And at the same time, you know, yeah, you can't do that. Do it anyway. This is how it's done. It's a spiritual path, not a mundane path. There are no credentials. There's no success story. There will be no diploma. There will be no consequence of it. Unless you call coming back into samsara and rotating around a big ball of fire in the middle of nowhere on a much smaller ball of earth. Keep doing that. Because if that one blows up, then you'll just end up on another circularity. If you look out there, there's quite a few circularities going on. And you don't get to choose.
Thank you.
You're welcome. You don't even get to decide to be a human being. Lots of beings out there. Consciousness will find its own form. Good luck. And thank you so much for your indulgence.
Hi, my name is Sokuren, and I'm one of Sokuzan's monks. Sokuzan so freely offers his love to us and his wisdom through these talks, and never asks us for anything in return. If you value what he does and what he is, and want them to continue, please visit our donate page at sokukoji.org. Thank you.